matter what might have happened in the past, you're a good person. Nothing is unforgivable if you're truly sorry. Let your sins be your teachers instead of the cross you hang on yourself. I gently kiss his lips. His eyes are fierce with unshed tears. I whisper, "Whatever you did, it's past. It's done. You're sorry and you're a good person, and I forgive you." A sob breaks from Brody's chest. Shaking, he sinks to his knees, wraps his arms around my thighs, and hides his face in my dress. Shoulders shaking, he starts to cry. For a moment, I'm stunned, speechless, frozen in shock. Whatever it is that's been gnawing at his conscience, he's been holding it in for so long, hating himself for so long, that the simple act of hearing me say it's okay has literally brought him to his knees. I'm flooded with emotion. My hands shake with it. I rest them on his shoulders, unsure what to do, and stand witness as he cries his guilt out at my feet, washing his soul clean. 27. Dinner is eaten almost entirely in silence. Brody and I sit side by side, holding hands under the dining room table, both of us too wrung out yet simultaneously wound too taut to speak. Magda serves us, moving with quiet efficiency to bring courses and clear plates. Her gaze darts between us, taking in our state of fragility. Two naked, frightened creatures washed up on unfamiliar shores. Brody drinks too much wine. He's pale, sweaty, disheveled, looking like he just fell off a cliff and smashed every bone in his body. As for me, I could only judge by Magda's eyes when she looks at me, by her vigilant, hawk-like expression, as if she's every moment on the verge of calling 911. "Have more," she urges me gently in Spanish, gesturing with a serving spoon to the casserole dish in her hand. It's chicken enchiladas with a verde sauce, deliciously succulent, one of at least five other things she's urged me to take a second helping of in the last 10 minutes. Brody was only slightly exaggerating about how many courses she made. Several platters await on the kitchen counter, steaming under aluminum foil, and there's some kind of pastry baking in the oven for dessert. But I know it will all go uneaten tonight. We're only sitting here out of courtesy and respect for Magda. The only place we both want to be right now is naked in each other's arms. I feel like we've got a Vulcan mind meld thing going on. As if every emotion he's having, I'm having. As if every thought inside his head is echoed inside mine. It's the most surreal experience. I'm not entirely convinced I'm not on the verge of a mental break.
"PTSD," says Brody suddenly, gazing in wonder at a blob of refried beans on his plate like he's seeing an image of Christ in it. He slowly lifts his head and turns his gaze to me. His eyes are dazed, a little unfocused.
"I was diagnosed with PTSD after..."
After it, he doesn't say. Whatever it is. My feeling of unreality growing, I whisper, "Me too." He looks like I've just told him I found his lost puppy.
"Really? That's... oh, wow. So the nightmares..."
I nod. "And the hypervigilance."
"And the avoidance."
"Triggers."
"Anxiety."
"Depression."
"Claustrophobia."
I wrinkle my brow. "No, not for me. Claustrophobia? That's awful." He nods woodenly, looking back at the refried beans.
"Yeah. I have trouble in enclosed spaces. Like planes. Even the big ones make me freak out."
His laugh sounds a little unhinged.
"Which makes touring with the band super fun."
So this is why his house is so big and open, I think, looking around. With the exception of the bedrooms, the entire floor plan is basically that of a loft.
all yawning spaces and high ceilings. And you don't get much more wide open than an endless, empty horizon looking out to the sea. You don't seem to me like the kind of man with any of those problems, I say softly. His laugh is without humor.
Some people are better at pretending they're fine than others.
I think, I know, like me. He and I are so alike, especially in how well we've both perfected our masks. Mine is one of toughness, his is one of lightheartedness. But inside, we're both battered in all the same ways. Perhaps this is why he feels so familiar. Why, as he said, there's a weird connection between us. Because our broken pieces match. I squeeze his hand. He looks up at me. My eyes pleading, I whisper his name. That's all it takes. He jolts to his feet, bringing me along with him.
Magda,
he says, his voice husky.
Thank you, and good night.
He turns abruptly, pulling me away by my hand. My last look at Magda is of her standing startled by the end of the dining room table, an oven mitt held in the air in confused farewell. We stumble down the long hallway toward Brody's bedroom like two toddlers getting used to their new feet. He slams into his bedroom door with a shoulder, throwing it open. He turns to me, his eyes wild.
Grace,
he chokes out.
Grace.
My name is a prayer on his lips. I fall on him, kissing him hungrily, desperately. He swings me up into his arms, kicks the door shut, and takes us down to the bed where we crash against each other, our mouths seeking, our hands grasping, our hearts unfettered, finally breaking free.
Free, free, free,
I think, spinning.
I'm like a bird set free.
When he hears my garbled laugh, Brody stills, panting above me.
What is it?
Sia, I answer, reaching up to pull his head down toward me. I've got a Sia song in my head.
At least it's not Taylor Swift. I'd be worried we're breaking up.
Never,
I hear myself whisper, as if I'm outside my own body. I kiss him and say the word again, against his lips, this time as a promise.
Never.
Brody softly groans.
I want.
I know, honey, I say breathlessly, pressing my pelvis to his. He's already hard. He groans again, hiding his face in my neck, fighting his instinct to tear off my clothes and bury himself in my body. I feel how hard he's fighting himself, but we need to be done with this. We're past this now. I turn my face to his ear.
I want you to make love to me. I want you to show me how you feel about me, and I want to show you how I feel about you. With my body, and my hands, and my mouth, and my heart, I want to show you how I feel. I want to bare myself to you. I don't want any more walls between us.
I press my lips to that place on his neck just beneath his ear that makes his entire body shudder.
Make love to me, Brody,
I whisper urgently, rocking my hips against him.
Make love to me and make me yours.
It's as if my words are a key that unlocks the cage to the dark animal part of him. An animal I've seen glimpses of, prowling around me, growling and sniffing, hackles raised as I run my fingers through its fur. But now the animal is unleashed. It pounces in all its full, bristling fury and devours me. With a snarl, Brody crushes his mouth to mine. This is no gentle lover's kiss, no sweet, sentimental meeting of lips. This is hard, hungry, and possessive, a claim that sends a thrill straight through me and leaves me gasping for breath. I kiss him back, desperate for the connection, for his taste and the wave of adrenaline sizzling over my skin. My thigh is drawn up beside his hip. He shoves the hem of my dress up my leg, his fingers digging into my flesh, and breaks the kiss with a growl when he feels the elastic of my stocking against my thigh. He lifts his head, stares at the black garter attached to the stocking, and mutters an oath. He rears up to his knees and pushes my dress all the way up to my waist.
"Garter belt and stockings,"
he whispers, breathing hard as he stares down at my spread legs.
"And no fucking panties."
His eyes, glittering, flash up to meet mine. Like a rabbit caught in a cobra's hypnotic gaze, I lie still, panting softly, frozen except for the rapid rising and falling of my chest. We stare at each other as he unbuttons his shirt. It divides between his fingers, falling open to reveal his beautiful skin, the angel's wings tattoos spanning his chest, the hard, bunched muscles of his abdomen. He discards the shirt to the floor.
"There's no running away after this, Grace. There's no going back. You're mine, and I'm yours, and that's that. Understood?"
I want to moan in anticipation but can't find the breath, so I simply nod, never looking away from his face. He plants his hands on the mattress beside my head and leans down until we're nose to nose.
"Say yes or no, sweetheart."
I whisper, "Yes." He takes the plunging neckline of my dress in his hands and rips it wide open. I gasp, shocked at the sound of tearing fabric, at how quickly he moved, and gasp again as he cups my breasts in his hands, squeezes them together, and falls on me, sucking a nipple into his mouth so strongly I arch off the bed and cry out.
"No bra either,"
he whispers to my other nipple.
"Such a bad girl. My perfect, bad, beautiful girl."
I'm delirious. The way he praises me with words as he worships me with his mouth, I never knew I could love something so much, that it could feel so natural, so good. I'm a flower, opening her petals to the sun. He sucks and licks my nipples until I'm squirming beneath him, and then he gives me his teeth. He knows exactly how I like it, how much pressure will make it sting without really hurting, how to make me breathlessly beg for more. "Please, Brody," I whimper, my hands dug into his thick hair, pulling him closer because I can't get him close enough.
"Don't worry, baby. I'll take care of you."
One of his hands finds my thigh, drifts downward as he circles his tongue around a nipple.
"You know I'll take care of you."
Very lightly, he slaps me between my spread legs. I jerk and yelp. He presses his palm over my sex. He lifts his head and gazes into my eyes. His own are hot and half-lidded, dark with lust.
"Which gets punished first, sweetheart?"
he softly asks.
"Your ass or your pussy?"
I think I might faint from desire. I softly moan.
"I love you like this,"
he breathes, lightly rubbing his thumb back and forth over my clit, watching me with those predator's eyes.
"So soft for me, so unguarded. You're never this vulnerable with anyone, are you, sweetheart?"
"No, Brody, only for you, only ever for you." It's a breathless, incoherent rush, and it makes his jaw harden.
"I think I fell in love with you the first time I saw you, Grace. That badass attitude and those long legs and all this beautiful fucking hair."
He bunches his hand in my hair and makes a fist.
"I just wanted to bury my face in it. I wanted to drown in it. I wanted to drown in you. And now I'm going to, and I'm never gonna come up for air again."
He takes my mouth, pulling my hair so my head arches back. My hips bucking against his other hand, my pulse flying and my body on fire, I dig my nails into his scalp.
"Ass or pussy, love?"
he growls, nipping my lower lip.
"Decide."
I've always believed that actions speak louder than words, so in one swift motion, I roll over beneath him, look at him over my shoulder, and wiggle my behind. His chuckle is darkly satisfied.
As it is.
He stands at the side of the bed, kicks off his shoes, removes my heels, and tosses them to the floor. Then he unzips his fly and takes his erection in his fist. He whispers,
"On your knees, Grace."
Trembling all over, my mouth dry, I get on my hands and knees. My dress is hiked up over my hips, exposing my bare bottom.
"Come over here."
He holds out his hand. I crawl to the edge of the bed. He steps closer and gently cups my jaw. Looking down at me, he says,
"I'm not into pain, giving it or receiving it. For me, this is all about pleasure, both yours and mine."
He waits for me to respond. I whisper, "Same."
"Good. Now, if you want it, ask me to spank you."
I look up at him, letting him see what's in my eyes. All the desire and the need, the permission he's seeking. My voice wavering, I say, "Brody, please spank me." He nods, satisfied. Moving slowly, he reaches out and caresses my bottom, one cheek at a time, a gentle gliding slide of skin on skin that makes me shiver. He firmly pinches my flesh, and I moan. His hand tightens around my jaw. His voice comes out raspy with desire.
"You'll never know how much I fucking love that sound, Grace, but you have to be quiet. Those little moans of yours make me lose control."
I bite my lip and hold my breath, my entire body primed to his touch. He stares down at me, his face flushed with color, his chest heaving, his jaw hard. His hand flashes up and down. It cracks across my flesh. I jump and shudder, but remain silent.
"Perfect,"
he whispers. Then he asks,
"Harder or softer?"
I choke out, "Harder."
"I'll do three and ask you again, okay?"
I nod. Between my legs, I'm soaked. I can't ever remember feeling like this, this extraordinary combination of lost and found, of shattered but whole, of finally being safe and seen. He spanks me three more times in quick succession on the same cheek, his hand firm and sure, his other hand still gripping my jaw, steadying me. When he stops, I release a pent-up breath in a noisy rush, then gasp for air. "More, more, don't stop now."
"You know what I need to hear."
I whimper. "Please." He leans down and kisses me.
"Play with yourself as I spank you, baby. But don't come. I want you to come with my cock inside you, not before."
He straightens. I put my hand between my legs, gasping again when I feel just how soaked I really am, how sensitive under my fingers.
"Tell me."
I groan. "I'm so wet, Brody. I'm so wet for you." Crack. At the first blow, my pussy clenches. I rock my hips into each successive blow, my eyes closed and my mouth open. Everything else blotted out of my consciousness except my hand between my legs and Brody's on my ass, claiming me. When he stops, he says gruffly,
"I need your mouth, beautiful."
The head of his cock nudges my lips. I open my mouth, greedy for his taste, and suck it in. His hand tied around my jaw, he inhales a sharp breath. I take him deeper. His moan is low and ragged, and the sexiest thing I've ever heard. Softly panting, he says,
"Suck me as I spank you, sweetheart, and keep playing with yourself. You get 10 more strokes, and remember, don't come."
I moan around his cock and am rewarded with a sharp, stinging slap on my behind.
"I know you did that on purpose,"
he growls, stroking his hand over my tender flesh to soothe it. I open my throat and take his hard cock all the way to the base. The zipper of his trousers is cold and sharp on my chin. He grunts,
"So fucking good."
crack, crack, crack. I lose count after three. I sink down into myself, past the noise in my head and the sound of blood screaming through my veins, past all thought and memory. I exist on a plane of pure sensation, untethered from time, untouched from all worries. Each stroke of my fingers over my clit, each swirl of my tongue around his cock, each blow of his hand that rocks my body, making my breasts swing and heat bloom over my ass, takes me deeper. Finally, I become aware of Brody moaning my name.
Not yet, Grace. Don't make me come yet.
He moves his hand to my throat and lightly squeezes. I'm so close to orgasm, it takes an enormous effort of will to remove my hand from between my legs and wrap it around the base of Brody's cock. I open my eyes and gaze up at him, only to find him staring down at me with a look of utter adoration. He swallows and moistens his lips.
You okay?
I slide his cock out of my mouth, furling my tongue around the head. More than okay. His laugh is husky.
You look a little blissed out. You sure you didn't come?
I shake my head.
Good.
He pushes me back by my shoulders.
Let's see how well you can obey me when I've got my mouth between your legs.
I fall flat to the mattress. Brody whips off the belt of my dress, a soft length of fabric tied in a bow at one side of my waist, and wraps it around his hands. He commands, put your arms over your head. Oh, God, he's going to tie me up. He's going to do exactly what he said he'd do on the phone and tie me up and...
That's right,
he says softly, watching my face.
Now do as you're told.
Trembling, I lift my arms overhead and rest them against the pillow. Brody leans over me and binds my wrists together, wrapping the belt around and between them. He takes the two loose ends and ties them into a loop, which he then pulls under the edge of the mattress to the right side of my head and ties off around the leg of the headboard. He then steps out of his slacks and briefs, peels off his socks, and stands there gazing down at me, stroking his erection. I bend my knees so my dress slides up my thighs, exposing me, and watch his expression transform. The wolf is on the prowl again. He kneels on the bed between my spread legs. Sliding his hands along my thighs, he pinches the tender flesh here and there, testing it first with his hands and then his teeth as he leans in to draw it into his mouth. The feel of his tongue on my flesh, so soft and warm, sucking, makes my pulse go haywire all over again. He blows a breath of air between my legs, chuckling when I start to rock my hips, eager for his mouth. He whispers a warning,
"Make any noise and I won't let you come."
Then he lowers his head and gives me what I need. I arch sharply off the mattress, biting my tongue to stay quiet, straining against the bindings around my wrists, my eyes squeezed shut. Brody slides two thick fingers inside me and presses them deep, making gentle circles as he swirls his tongue around my clit. With his free hand, he reaches up and cups my breast, and then pinches my aching nipple between his thumb and forefinger. Pleasure builds and builds and builds, coiling hotly around that bright center of Brody's clever tongue, until I'm panting hard and loud and my legs are quivering.
God, you're beautiful,
comes the reverent whisper from between my legs.
You're close, aren't you?
Yes. The word is gritted out through clenched teeth. I'm right there, right at the edge, teetering. Brody flips me onto my belly, presses a hand flat to the small of my back to hold me in place, and then starts to spank my behind again, lighter than before but faster, back and forth from side to side, creating a rhythm that sends shockwaves pulsing through my lower body. He keeps it up until my ass is burning and I'm grinding my pelvis against the bed. I cry out his name. He stops abruptly and leans over me.
talk to me.
I sob. I'm so close. I'm so fucking close. Please, Brody, please, please.
His breathing is as rough as mine. He smooths a hand over my stinging behind, and then slides his fingers down between my thighs.
Fuck, he whispers. You're drenched, sweetheart. You loved that, didn't you?
My only answer is a broken, pleading sob. His fingers slide over my pulsing clit. I jerk, crying out again. Brody whispers,
shh, baby, hush.
I whimper into the pillow.
I need to come so bad. Please make me come.
He bites me softly on the shoulder, and then nuzzles my ear, nosing aside my hair. His hand is still between my legs, gently stroking, keeping me right on the razor's edge.
Let me get a condom.
I'm clean, I say immediately.
Me too, but...
And I'm on the pill.
Brody's exhalation is half growl, half groan.
You want me to fuck you bare, sweetheart?
I open my eyes and look at him. In a harsh whisper, I demand,
make me yours. Come inside me and make me yours.
Brody takes my head in his hands and kisses me so hard I can't breathe. Then he rolls me over again and hooks my legs over his arm so I'm spread open wide. He guides the head of his throbbing cock to my wet entrance, takes one of my nipples into his mouth, and begins to suckle it, holding himself still, not pushing forward inside me. I groan, pulling hard against the ties around my wrists and rocking my hips so the head of his cock is sliding up and down, slipping through my folds. It's friction, but it's not enough. I'm out of my mind with need. Brody eases forward an inch. I moan brokenly, calling his name. Then I start to beg.
Please fuck me. I need you to fuck me. I need it now. Brody, now, please.
So demanding,
he whispers and flexes his hips. It takes him another inch inside. I moan in frustration, loud and long. Into my ear, Brody breathes,
oh, sweetheart, you know what I said about that.
He curls his fingers around the stocking on my left leg and rips it right off the garter by pulling it sharply down my thigh. The delicate nylon tears apart like gossamer. The garter springs back. He bends my leg, yanks the stocking all the way off, and then balls it up and shoves it in my mouth. Then, with one hand gripping my ass and one cradling my head, he thrusts inside me. My sob of pleasure and relief is muffled by the stocking. Brody puts his mouth next to my ear, whispering how much he adores me, how good I feel, how he'd do anything for me. He starts to fuck me as he said he would on the phone, deep and slow. His breath is uneven, his body is heavy, hot and shaking on top of mine. I come fast and hard, convulsing beneath him, crying out against the stocking, feeling the slap of his balls against my ass as he fucks me with firm, rhythmic strokes of his cock. He kisses my breasts and neck and face, his big hands roaming all over my body.
Grace,
he gasps, thrusting faster. He grips my head in both hands and stares down at me so I see the exact moment it happens. His eyes close. A sound comes from his throat, deep inside him, a guttural noise of pleasure. Then he comes, jerking and groaning, gasping for air.
Grace,
he rasps, shuddering on top of me.
My saving grace, my angel.
Still moving inside me, he presses his cheek to mine. I don't know if the wetness I feel there is from his tears or mine, but I do know, with every wild, painful beat of my heart, in all the dark, abandoned parts of my soul, that he's got it wrong. It isn't me who saved him. It's him who saved me. Hallelujah. 28. We sleep. I awaken sometime in the night, whimpering from a bad dream, but Brody is there, shushing me gently, stroking my back, cradling me against him. Soon I'm quiet and fall back into slumber in his arms. When the day breaks gray and still outside, he makes love to me again, but this time slower, softer, and silently. There are no words or bindings or spankings. There are only our bodies and shared breaths, a mutual sense of wonder reflected in our eyes. We sleep again. When next I awaken, it's to a brilliant blue sky and the smell of frying bacon. Brody is gone. On his pillow were three Polaroid pictures of us, taken while I was sleeping, my head tucked into his neck. He's looking into the camera with the expression of a man who's converted to a new religion. With the pictures is a note. Grace, I don't know who I am today. Yesterday I was someone else, someone smaller. Today I looked in the mirror, and it's like I grew a foot taller and understand things I didn't understand before. I feel like a new man, a better man, because of you. I didn't want to wake you because you looked so peaceful. I went surfing. We'll be back by 8. I hope you don't think it's creepy that I took pictures while you were sleeping, but I wanted to capture the moment for the memory book. The moment we first became us. Yours, Brody. P.S. I'm crazy about you. P.P.S. I absolutely adore you. P.P.P.S. I'm so fucking insane over you, I'm out of my mind. The sheet of paper trembles in my hand. I realize my cheeks are wet and start to laugh. How is it possible for the human body to hold so much emotion? How is it possible that I'm not splitting wide open with all the hope and terror and joy I'm feeling? I don't know. I don't care. Right now, I really just need some bacon. I leap out of bed. My new dress is on the floor, demolished. I pick it up, laughing again, and hug it to my chest. I spin around in the middle of the room with my arms flung wide like Julie Andrews in the Mountain Meadow when she played the nun in The Sound of Music. Except naked. And I'm no nun. I take a shower, singing show tunes at the top of my lungs. When I'm done with the shower, I rifle through Brody's drawers and steal another t-shirt, this one advertising Bad Habit. How apropos. And a pair of his sweats, which I have to roll up at the ankles and fold over at the waist. Then I head out to the kitchen and the delicious scent of breakfast. Magda, I shout when I see her at the stove cooking. She jumps and turns to look at me. I spread my arms and smile. Buenos dias. She snorts, rolls her eyes, and turns back to the stove, shaking her head. I go up behind her and give her a hug. Poking at sizzling bacon with a metal spatula, she says to me in Spanish, "He's a slob, you know. A terrible slob. Worse than a pig. You think this house is so clean because of him? No. Also, he doesn't call his mother enough. And he uses a pore-reducing facial mask. What kind of man does this? Ich. He's too pretty for his own good. But if you can get past all these character flaws, I think you will be happy with him. He's trainable," she says with a shrug, like that's the most we women can hope for in a life partner. "You've done a good job with him," I say. She pauses her stirring to contemplate the bacon. "He was a wild thing when he was a boy. I worried that he'd turn out so bad. But he learns from his mistakes. Like I said." She begins to stir again. Trainable. Eager to hear stories of Brody as a boy, I am just about to pepper Magda with questions when the man himself walks in through the patio doors. He's barefoot and dripping, still in his wetsuit, smiling a smile that would put the sun to shame. "My two favorite girls in the kitchen," he says, his gaze trained on me, green eyes alight. Magda barks something at him in Spanish that I don't bother to translate. I run over to him and fling my arms around his neck. He laughs, staggering back a few steps.
Whoa, did someone have a Red Bull this morning?
I smile up at him, not caring at all that the front of my t-shirt is getting wet. I whisper,
someone had a raging bull last night.
Grinning, he lowers his head and kisses me. He tastes like the ocean, sweet and salty.
You're getting better at those compliments, Slick. Keep 'em coming.
Yes, sir, I reply. He lifts an eyebrow.
Looks like I'm trainable, too.
Pointing with her spatula at the towel she left for him on a little table by the patio doors, Magda shouts at Brody to dry off before coming in the house. Though it's spoken in Spanish, he gets the idea.
As you command, evil overlord, he says seriously.
He bows. Magda and I share a look. She turns back to the stove, smiling. Brody dries off and goes to change while I help Magda set the table. Though she protests we should have our privacy, I insist she have breakfast with us. When Brody reappears and sees the two of us getting ready to sit down, he smiles. You're looking a little misty-eyed over there, Kong, I observe, watching him pull out his chair. When he sits down, I pass him the bowl of seasoned home-fried potatoes. He takes it from me and scoops some onto his plate.
Honestly, I feel like I won the lottery or something.
Magda yells at him that he did, and he better not fuck it up. Brody looks to me for help. I try not to laugh when I say, she said she really loves you, that's all. His lips twist.
I see I'm outnumbered.
Magda brings over a plate of bacon on paper towels and a bigger plate piled with scrambled eggs and dusted with Mexican cotija cheese. She pours glasses of fresh-squeezed orange juice from a pitcher, sits down at the table with us, folds her hands under her chin, and closes her eyes. When Brody and I just sit there looking at her, she opens her eyes.
Grace,
she barks. She doesn't mean my name. Though I'm as religious as a garbanzo bean, I obediently fold my hands together and bow my head. Sitting across from me, Brody does the same, hiding his smile behind his clasped hands.
Good morning, God,
begins Magda, sounding like they're business partners. She's praying in English, which means she wants Brody to understand what's being said.
We thank you for this food, and for this day, and for this family. We thank you for the blessings of our health, and our friends, and the many bounties of this life you have given us.
I was given this life because I'm strong enough to live it.
Given by whom? I never thought to ask myself before now. I listen with my heart beating harder as Magda continues.
We thank you for the lessons you teach us, even when they're hard, and for loving us even when we don't deserve it. We thank you for forgiving us all our many sins, and we promise to always do the same for each other, no matter what. Amen.
There's a moment of silence so stark I'm sure I can hear my fingernails growing. Then Magda makes the sign of the cross over her chest and happily begins to eat. Brody and I stare at each other across the table. He swallows, his Adam's apple bobbing up and down. He reaches out for my hand. When I grasp it, his fingers are trembling. He squeezes. I squeeze back. And just like that, over bacon and eggs and a morning prayer, a pact is sealed between us. Forgiveness. No matter what. From the corner of my eye, I see Magda smile. Brody has a taping for Jimmy Kimmel's late-night talk show with the band today, so after breakfast, I'm left to my own devices. My devices include floating through the air as if on clouds, dreamily unpacking the clothes I bought yesterday and hanging them in the closet in the guest house bedroom, and calling Kat, only to forget what I wanted to say by the time she picks up. What's the matter with you, Space Cadet? She asks, when it becomes apparent I have no idea why I'm calling. When I don't answer quickly enough, she gasps.
You got the D!
She screams gleefully.
Boy, did I ever.
I... Oh, Cat, why didn't you warn me it would be like this? I ask feebly, staring at myself in the bathroom mirrors. My cheeks are red, my eyes are wild. I look like I just snorted a line of heroin. The laughter on the other end of the phone is raucous and lasts a ridiculously long time. I hate you, I say, only that sounds dreamy too.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall, she crows.
In the background, I hear a voice asking her what's going on. She covers the phone with her hand, but not tightly enough, so I hear her muffled response.
Brody has entranced Grace with his enchanted penis, and now she's in love.
I can hear you, idiot, and who are you talking to? She comes back on the line. Chloe and Abby are over. What are you up to today? She giggles. Besides being dick-dazzled. I run my hand through my hair, watching it sift through my fingers, fascinated for some strange reason by the fiery color of it, the way it drifts down to my shoulder like feathers on a breath of air. Nothing. I'm off this week. I need to go house hunting and shopping and... When I trail off, distracted by the weird glowing light behind my eyes, Cat starts to laugh again. I say, Cat. Yes, Gracie. I owe you an apology. An apology? She repeats, confused. What for? I touch my cheek, feeling the burn. For any time I didn't support you about what you felt for Nico. For any time I mocked it or said something insensitive or was a horrible cynical bitch. I just didn't. I inhale a shaky breath. I just didn't understand. After a short pause, Cat whistles.
Wow. You've got it bad, don't you?
I close my eyes, nodding.
Yes, the worst.
And to be completely honest, I'm so happy I could die and so scared I could piss myself. I have no idea what to do. Cat says gently,
Join the club, Titanium.
I groan, covering my eyes with my hand. Cat hurries to add, But don't worry, it gets better. The terror recedes, I mean, a little. And if you're together long enough, you'll get bored of him and won't want to have sex with him anymore, and he'll start to irritate you, and it will get easier. My eyes widen.
Is that true?
She laughs. No, I was just trying to be helpful. If it's true love, it doesn't change. Ever. Every time he walks into a room, you'll still feel those butterflies. Every time he smiles at you, you'll still feel like you're home. Did you think all those books and songs and plays about love that have been written over thousands of years were bullshit? I think about it for a minute. Well, yes. She sighs.
I kind of feel sorry for your patience right now.
My patience. Holy shit, my patience. How will I ever face the wife who admitted she's only staying married because her husband is filthy rich, but she's in love with the gardener? Or the husband with five children who thinks he might be in love with his secretary, his male secretary. Everything is so much more complicated when you understand. Love isn't a problem to be passed out on a spreadsheet with columns of pros and cons. Love isn't something you weigh against money or duty or convenience. Barney was right. Love is everything. Love is the only fucking thing that matters, the only really real thing there is. I burst into tears.
Grace,
Cat cries. Oh my God, are you crying?
The worst part is that I can't unknow it.
I sob, my shoulders shaking, tears streaming down my face.
Now that I know, I can't go back to the way I was. Before.
Cat's sigh is soft.
Oh, sweetie, welcome to the human race.
She pauses.
You'll like it here. There's a lot of weeping and stupid fights, but we really have good makeup sex.
In between my tears, I start to laugh.
Atta girl, now you've got the idea, Kat says. Just keep that up for the next few months straight, and you'll have a glimmer of understanding of what the rest of us have been going through since birth.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. You'll live. So are you coming over or what?
I am. And I love you, Kat. I love you so much.
She mutters. Holy Christmas, now she's so nurturing she's practically a womb.
I'll be there in an hour.
We'll be waiting with bells on. And Grace?
What?
I can feel Kat's smile over the phone. I love you too.
29. On the drive to Kat's, my insurance company calls to say that if I can sign all the claim paperwork today, the settlement for my condo and temporary living expenses will be in my bank account within 7 business days. I make a detour to their offices and arrive at Kat's feeling like I have a new lease on life. Because I learned from my parents to have everything I own insured to the teeth, I'm looking at a substantial chunk of cash. I had no idea my condo had gone up in value so much since I bought it, and had forgotten about the annual inflation clause in the insurance policy that increased the value of things like my jewelry from their actual purchase price. For obvious reasons, I did not include my cherished vibrator collection in the policy. I'll have to ask Brody if he thinks I'll require replacements. That's a conversation I'm very much looking forward to. By the time I ring Kat's doorbell, I'm grinning like a maniac. She opens the door and blinks at me. I'm sorry, we don't allow solicitors here. Solicitors?
Yes. Judging by that zealous smile, you're obviously with some crackpot religious outfit and are here to discuss my relationship with God. And when I tell you I'm in tight with the man upstairs, you're gonna ask me for money. Go sell crazy somewhere else.
She slams the door in my face. 2 seconds later, it opens to reveal Chloe laughing. I say, is she getting weirder in her old age?
Chloe replies, she's a total whack job, and she's talking about getting cats, so we might want to arrange an intervention. Come in.
She pulls me over the threshold, closes the door behind me, and gives me a hug. Looking effortlessly gorgeous in a simple white shirt and blue jeans, ballet flats on her feet, her long blonde hair in a ponytail, and not a speck of makeup on her face, she sets her hands on my shoulders.
I hear you're in love.
I purse my lips. Is that what you call it when you feel like you have been electrocuted and injected with mind-altering chemicals, are deliriously happy but also constantly on the verge of panic, and are so horny you could be a case study for a book on nymphomania?
Chloe says, yes.
Shit. I was hoping it was the stomach flu. With an expression you'd wear to a funeral, she says,
congratulations.
I raise my brows. I'm sorry, what have you done with my friend Chloe? The bright and shiny one with the day-glow smile and the My Little Pony obsession who still believes in Santa Claus? She ignores that.
Have you had your first fight yet?
We just had sex for the first time last night. If we're fighting already, there's trouble in paradise. Her smile is knowing and a little sad.
Oh, there's always trouble in paradise, girlfriend. And it'll catch up to you when you least expect it. So I'm going to give you a piece of advice I learned the hard way to save you some pain when trouble finally shows up. Don't run away.
I look around for help from some other more sane person. I call out, are there any normal people at home today? Chloe gives my shoulders a shake.
I'm not kidding, Grace.
I look more closely at her. Chloe, is everything all right? She inhales a long breath through her nose and then drops her hands to her sides.
Actually, she says, her lower lip trembling, I think AJ is dying.
She might as well have just reached into my chest, grabbed my heart, and ripped it out. I gasp, horrified. No. Chloe, tell me you're not serious. You know I would never joke about that. I throw my arms around her and hug her as hard as I can. Into my hair, she whispers, I don't think I can live without him, Grace. I don't think I'm strong enough to go on if he... Don't you dare say that. I pull back and grip her by her upper arms. You have Abby to think about now. You can't indulge in that kind of nonsense, not even for a second. Her face crumples.
I know, she whispers, shaking. I know, but the thought of being without him...
She can't say anything more because she dissolves into tears. I hug her again, more gently this time. My heart feels like it might explode with all the pain inside it. I can't even imagine what Chloe must be feeling right now. What does his doctor say? She sniffles.
I finally got him to make an appointment. It's in a few weeks. That's the soonest they could fit him in.
Wait. I pull away again, searching her face. So, this is just a feeling of yours? You don't have any evidence?
He's getting these terrible headaches, and he's tired all the time.
That's all she offers as proof of AJ's impending demise. I'm so relieved I could faint.
Sweetie, you're doing this thing called awfulizing. It's when you overestimate the potential consequences of a perceived threat.
He's not himself, she protests. He's sick. I can tell.
Okay, I say, keeping my voice soothing. I believe you. But until he sees the doctor, let's keep our thoughts positive, all right? It could be something serious, but it could also be something simple. For both AJ and Abby's sake, you need to try to focus on good thoughts. For your sake, too. You're the glue holding your family together, Chloe. You have to be super glue. And Kat and I are here to be your super glue, okay? I cup her wet face in my hands. No matter what happens, we've got your back. Always. In all ways. You will never, ever have to go through anything alone. Not if you believe me.
She nods, sniffling, her eyes red and her face blotchy. I blow out a breath, straighten my spine, and say, Good. Now let's have a drink.
It's 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, well, it's 10 p.m. in Tanzania. Chloe looks confused.
What the hell is in Tanzania?
Mount Kilimanjaro. Her face brightens.
Oh, yeah. I remember when you went there. Do you ever hear from that guide? What was his name? The one who was so in love with you and kept emailing all that terrible poetry? Chicken?
Rooster. And no. The last I heard, he moved to Indonesia and became a Trappist monk.
Wow, Grace. Way to ruin a guy's life.
It's not my fault he decided to retreat from society and live with a bunch of guys in robes on the side of some desolate mountain.
Wiping away her tears, Chloe smiles at me. Sure it's not. I return her smile.
You're a terrible friend.
Yet you love me. Now let's go get that drink.
I thought you'd never ask.
We link arms and walk toward the kitchen, where we can hear Kat and Abby having a spirited back and forth about the ideal temperature for reheated breast milk in a bottle.
Kat's doing Abby's voice as Darth Vader.
I love my friends.
I end up spending the rest of the day at Kat's. We eat and swim and play with Abby, who is the world's most adorable infant. She has her mother's innate happiness, smiling at everything, cooing and gurgling like an advertisement for the joys of motherhood. I love this kid, I say more than once, staring at her. How awesome is this kid? Kat and Chloe share one too many secret smiles when I say that, and I have to tell them to shut up. After we make plans to go with Kat to the fertility clinic on Friday, I drive back to Malibu in the late afternoon, into the setting sun, listening to Frank Sinatra at full blast, feeling like a million bucks. A jeep full of teenage boys pulls up alongside me at a light on PCH. They start to catcall and yell sexually aggressive things, rambunctious as a bunch of dumb puppies. I smile, blow them a kiss, and leave them in the dust when the light changes. Brody isn't home yet when I get back to the house, so I pour myself a glass of wine and take a bubble bath. I must doze off because the next thing I know, I am hearing the mechanical pop and whir of a Polaroid camera. I open my eyes and find Brody standing at the edge of the bathtub, grinning at me.
Is it wrong that I keep taking pictures of you when you're unconscious?
I smile up at him. He's sexy as hell in what I think of as his rich bad boy musician attire. Lots of tight denim and black leather, motorcycle boots, and bohemian silver jewelry, with incongruously perfect hair and a chunky platinum diamond-encrusted watch. He's so L.A., and I love it. Technically, I think it's illegal, but I hereby give you permission to photograph me in any state of consciousness. Or undress. I bat my eyelashes at him and float up a few inches, so my boobs, rimmed in bubbles, poke out above the water. After all, it's for posterity. Brody stares at my wet, bubble-slicked breasts. His voice husky, he says,
"Posterity. I forgot what that word means."
I giggle. "Just take a picture, Kong." He does. Then he sets the camera and the underdeveloped print on the sink counter, kneels, and plunges his arms into the bathwater. I squeal as he grabs me and lifts me out of the tub, dripping wet. "Brody!"
"Grace,"
he answers calmly, standing. He turns and heads into the bedroom. We leave a trail of bubbles behind us, floating to the floor. I cling to him, laughing in disbelief. "What the hell are you doing?"
"Taking my woman to bed."
We reach the bed in just a few strides of his long legs. He drops me on the mattress so I bounce, still laughing, and before I can do or say anything else, he's on his elbows and knees with his fingers digging into my hips and his mouth hot and greedy between my legs. I arch instinctively, my laughter swallowed by a groan.
"Thought about this beautiful fucking pussy all goddamn day,"
he mutters, sliding a finger inside me.
"I can't get enough of you, Grace. I'll never have enough."
He goes right back to sucking, his tongue lashing my clit, his finger pressing deep. I cut my breasts and pinch my hard nipples, feeling his approving groan right in the center of my body vibrating through me. I whisper breathlessly, "I missed you too." He straightens, rips down the zipper of his jeans, frees his hard cock, and without removing any of his clothes, shoves it inside me. I cry out. He starts to fuck me hard with no preliminaries.
"Look at you,"
he whispers, his eyes devouring me, thrusting into me so my breasts are bouncing and the whole bed is shaking. He lifts my legs, hooks my ankles over his shoulders, and grips my ass, lifting my pelvis off the bed, so when he thrusts into me again, the angle has changed. Deepened. I cry out once more, this time louder. Bubbles are flying everywhere. I'm completely wet. He's mostly wet from the plunge into the bathtub and carrying me, and we're both frantic. When I'm gasping on the verge of orgasm, Brody abruptly pulls out of my body, flips me over, puts an arm under my waist, and hikes my ass in the air so my face is buried in the pillow. Then he starts to spank me. I close my eyes and grip the bed covers in my fists, biting back my moans of pleasure.
"All day I dreamed of this,"
he growls through a clenched jaw.
"This gorgeous ass pink from my hand and your little sounds as I fucked you and you tried so hard not to come. You fucking own me, Grace. You own me."
The spanking ends, replaced by the hot, hard slide of his cock deep inside me. He bends over my body so his chest is pressed to my bare back, fists a hand in my hair, and flexes his pelvis, pumping into me again and again. My bottom stings. My nipples ache, I'm dripping between my legs, throbbing there, every shove of his thick cock inside me, pushing moisture down my